Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. A behind-the-scenes look at the White Sox as they prepare for the 2021 baseball season. Brought to you by Wintrust Bank, Mazda of Orland Park on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's new home of the White Sox.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. It is January 30th. We are very close to February, which means we are closer and closer, at least we hope, to pitchers and catchers reporting, which means we're closer to spring training starting, which means we're closer and closer to the start of the 2021 White Sox season. Lovely to have you with us this morning. A pleasure, although it's all ours, really. Truly, it is. Your show today, except for the 9:35 segment, we're going to use that to talk with Jonathan Mayo of MLB Pipeline. The top 100 prospects in baseball ranked by MLB Pipeline are out. The White Sox have four in the top 100, ranked by Jonathan Mayo. We're going to talk about the rest of the list, too, because prospects are fun. And the White Sox have a couple of good ones, a couple of ones ready to graduate, and some that have already graduated. So that's all, you know, that's really all good stuff. I do, though, even though I'm very excited to do the show today and looking forward to talking White Sox baseball and talking about some other moves that got made in and around the division and around the league with some players that the White Sox may or may not have been linked to over the last little bit, I am just a little bit in mourning today. And it's because this weekend is usually Sox Fest. You know what I mean? It's right around that January 25th, 26th, you know, this past weekend, this weekend, depending on when schedules fell and when the stars aligned and when Frank was able to make it, all that kind of stuff. I love Sox Fest. I really do. Been going since I started covering baseball in this town, been either working it or covering it or being part of the activities and part of the broadcasts there through various stations or when I was, you know, doing the White Sox Weekly and pre and post game in the past. I miss seeing Sox fans. I miss having those conversations. I miss seeing y'all in the halls. I miss everybody who does a great job covering this team from the beat writers all the way to, you know, folks who write blogs and people who write really good ones like the guys at Sox Machine and Future Sox and, you know, beat writers like Scott Merkin and everybody like that. I miss the connection. And I was able to fill in for the Waddle and Sylvie show this last week on ESPN 1000. And we talked a lot about, you know, kind of what we miss and the need to go back to sporting events. And it really is for me, and I think for a lot of White Sox fans, a thing that we are very much needing and a thing that we're very much ready for, but understanding that it's not there yet. We don't get to go back to games yet. We don't get to all hang out and hear the crack of the bat and grab a beer and all that kind of stuff. We're not there yet, but we're looking forward to it. And this weekend, you know, this last weekend of January or so is when Sox Fest rolls around. And I kind of miss it some. Speaking of Scott Merkin, at the end of the show, we're going to talk a bit about a top 10 list that Scott put together on MLB.com. It's a fun one. It's got a lot of audio involved with it. We get to kind of relive some White Sox past and hear some highlights and kind of remember those guys. It's all that kind of stuff. Really looking forward to it. I mentioned Jonathan Mayo is going to join us right about 9:35 or so. We'll get into the White Sox prospect list, talk a lot about Andrew Vaughn and Nick Madrigal, who Jonathan Mayo is very high on. We'll go down the list, too, because White Sox fans are well acquainted, I think, with the guys at the top of that list. You should be. Most of them have played at the major league level, and everybody's been talking about Andrew Vaughn since the day he got drafted. I get it. So we'll go down the list as well and see who else he likes, you know, toward the middle tier, I guess, of White Sox prospects. One thing I do want to bring up, too, though, as we kind of start things out, We had Len Casper. I was in with Sylvie, like I mentioned last week, and we had Len Casper on Friday, and we talked a bit about kind of the expectations of when this season begins and what spring training may look like and that kind of thing. I don't know anything yet. I do know that many of us are kind of understanding that it may not be when we want it to be. Obviously, there's been a lot of conversation from the, I guess you call them city officials in Maricopa County. That's, you know, that's Glendale. That's, I think Maricopa County is like, it's the gigantic piece of Arizona. I think it's the whole thing, and then everybody else lives outside Maricopa. But that's the bulk of the Cactus League. And I feel like it's worth talking about. I feel like it's worth letting everybody know if you have missed it. It is possible that things aren't starting on time. It is possible that we're looking at a bit of a different and adjusted schedule. White Sox Weekly will still be here for you regardless of what time or what day spring training starts. However, I do think, and Len mentioned this when we talked with him, Len Casper, the new voice of the White Sox here on ESPN 1000, that everybody's kind of talking and feeling like 150-plus games makes sense. You know, assuming that things trend and go the way they seem to have trend and goed. Those aren't words, but I'm making them up and I'm using them. But you know what I'm saying? Like, as long as the line kind of continues the way it's going, 150-something games makes some sense, and I think it's probably the floor. And that's a good thing, because I think for a lot of reasons, in 2020, the White Sox were a very interesting team because, oh, gosh, we talked about it a whole lot, right? High variance benefits teams that lean into high variance. And with Luis Robert having never played in the major leagues and Nick Madrigal expected to come up at any point during the 2020 season or as soon as he was ready, as soon as the clock was ready, all that kind of stuff, then we knew that those rookies, that those, you know, guys with not a lot of playing time at the major league level could theoretically benefit from that high variance, from the league not really knowing what to do with him yet. And we saw that with Luis Robert a little bit. And we saw kind of the step back, too, as teams sort of figured him out, or maybe some, you know, wear and tear, wore in kind of thing. Everybody remembers the last month that Luis Robert has. It wasn't quite the first two. That's neither here nor there. It's just to say that now you have a roster, a squad that is more seasoned from the lower parts, or from the rookie-ish parts, right? Luis Robert has been through at least one trip around the league, or at least the centrals, as it were. There is an understanding of what it takes to play Major League Baseball, and now I think a lot of White Sox fans are ready to see them take on, you know, the full sandwich, ready to go watch them take on a full 150-ish, 162 games. I think a lot of people are looking forward to that. I think a lot of people are looking forward to seeing a full-fledged rotation fill itself out with Dylan Cease and Reynaldo Lopez, Michael Kopech kind of finishing out those top six guys. And I'm going to, you know, if you're new to White Sox Weekly or new to me, you're going to hear me talk about the starting rotation in terms of more than just five quite often. We've seen it in and around baseball. It's the way pitching is changing now. It takes more than five to win in a season. And oftentimes, and I think a lot of baseball fans have kind of been keeping an eye on this, there are a lot of teams now talking about what a six-man rotation could do with them. Free agent Trevor Bauer is talking a lot about what a six-man rotation could potentially do for individual pitchers, too. It's going to take more than just five. I think we know that now. And at least that's the way baseball's set up. So I'm going to talk about the starting rotation as more than just five guys for a real long time. There have been a couple of moves here. By the way, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. I want to hear from you. You got anything White Sox related, anything in and around the league you want to get to? It's your show. That's what this is. It's for White Sox fans. Give us a call. You want to ask a question? I'm here for you. You can watch us on Twitch, too. We got a handful of you joining us on Twitch. Love you. Appreciate it. Twitch.tv, just search ESPN 1000 Chicago. We are broadcasting from the First Midwest Bank State Street Studios. So a couple of moves have been made over the last handful of days that have kind of tangentially involved the White Sox and kind of not involved the White Sox, but it's all baseball and I think it all kind of matters some. And I want to get into first the Jock Peterson signing from the Cubs. And I want to do this because, quite obviously, Jock Peterson and the White Sox have been, you know, and if you follow the team, you've heard Jock Peterson's name and White Sox mentioned in a lot of hot stove reports. You've heard them mentioned in trade rumors in years past. It's a player and team that have been linked quite a bit in the last, what would be fair, probably 2 years, maybe two and change, something like that. Jock Peterson is a guy who was probably available for that kind of span because the Dodgers are so darn deep, it's ridiculous. So Peterson, as a guy who fits one half of a platoon, you know, the left-handed hitting power kind of guy who can take on right-handers and hopefully deposit a lot of baseballs in the seats if you've got him on your team, makes a lot of sense for a whole bunch of teams. If you can hit right-handed pitching for power, you can have a job in this game for quite some time. And if you've got defense that can manage center field and be pretty okay in corners, that's an even, you know, hopefully a longer career, at least in terms of Jock. The LA Times had a report out that truly did link the White Sox and Jock Peterson. Jorge Castillo, I was pulling it up on my phone. I want to make sure I get it correctly. Jorge Castillo is a fine beat writer for the LA Times, wrote this. And I want to read it to you as is, because I know the conversation for White Sox fans has been, you know, all over the place as it concerns what's left. Are there more moves? What happens at DH? Is there a backup catcher? All that kind of thing. And as some players have come off the board here, I know that's been a source of concern. Here's what Castillo writes about Peterson. Another year in Los Angeles was never likely for Jock. The Dodgers, theoretically, could have re-signed him at $7 million, but they would have kept limiting him to starts against right-handed pitchers. He wants to play every day. Keep that in mind. The lack of clarity regarding a designated hitter in the National League didn't help. The universal DH, which appears, this is Castillo reporting, which appears unlikely in 21, would have boosted Peterson's stock. He garnered interest from other clubs, including the White Sox, the Brewers, and the Braves, according to people with knowledge of the situation, but the demand for his services was icy. Middle-class free agents, Peterson figured out, had been squeezed this offseason. His negotiations centered on a one-year deal. The huge contract he seemed destined to reach just a few years ago wasn't there. And boy, remember, Peterson was he was the can't-miss kind of dude. I don't know that he quite had the Bellinger shine. Didn't have the Wander Franco kind of move either. He's the top prospect rated by MLB Pipeline, Tampa Bay Rays shortstop, who apparently is the next best thing since sliced bread. We'll talk to Jonathan Mayo about that about 9:30. Either way, here's how this report kind of rounds out. The White Sox offered Peterson, this is Castillo reporting again, a one-year contract worth at least $10 million. But he asked for more money and was turned down, according to a person with knowledge of the situation. The club then signed Adam Eaton, that was a little while after, signed a one-year $7 million deal with a club option for 2022 last month. James Feegan of The Athletic has reported, or at least kind of conversed on Twitter, I guess I should say, that Eaton's option for 22 was an important thing for the White Sox, which makes some sense. And I think Eaton's floor versus Peterson's floor is where I want to start talking about the difference between the two players. So you have the reports, you have where things kind of sat between your team, the White Sox, and the reports about the player that seemed to have fit, that they seemed to have been interested in. But remember, as things moved around here, as the market has kind of shifted, or at least changed some with a lot of free agents being signed and one-year deals being worked, and uncertainty, not just in terms of when does spring training start, how does the season roll out, what do teams' finances look like, but also, and importantly, is there a DH in the National League? That changes teams' conversations with players quite a bit. So that's what we had when we come back. We've got some player movement in and around the league and a big-time hitter that's still out there and waiting, and that DH conversation could matter there too. Some teams in the division have made some additions. Do they catch up with the White Sox? Do they get themselves closer? We'll talk about that as well. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You want to talk White Sox? Here's the place to do it. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly.
On Chicago's home for sports.
On ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
The new home of the White Sox.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Yeah. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. Give us a call, 312-332-3776. We've had a lot of player movement in the last, 48 hours. Not all of it's necessarily going to affect the White Sox, their ability to win the AL Central, but some of it has affected American League teams. One big move last night. I think it's still technically reported. I haven't seen the, and to be honest with you, prepping for the show, I haven't seen it, but that doesn't mean it hasn't been official yet. It sounds like Nolan Arenado is going to go from the Rockies to the Cardinals for a box of oranges and money. So that's good for the Cardinals and good for them in the NL Central. Not so great for the Rockies, because when you lose a player of that caliber, it's never good, regardless of the situation. We've been talking a lot about Jock Peterson, though, because the LA Times report by Jorge Castillo linked Jock Peterson and the White Sox. And I think it's really important to mention this. In the report Castillo wrote yesterday, it mentions that the White Sox and Jock Peterson's interest was a while ago, right? Like some weeks before Adam Eaton even signed. The request from Peterson's side, as it seems, was playing time. Full-time kind of stuff. Peterson struggles hitting left-handed pitching. Struggle might be putting it lightly. He did have a better 2020 hitting lefties. I think it was a 112 weighted runs created plus. The career weighted runs created plus for him against left-handed pitching sits somewhere around the 55 mark, though. 60 games, anybody can kind of do anything. And I'm sure that Peterson wants the full-time job in the outfield, regardless of the spot, but wants the full-time job in the outfield so that he can, you know, listen, this is a pandemic economy, right? For baseball players, too. He's 29 years old. He takes the one-year deal, has a chance to get something a little larger, or a little longer. You know, hopefully that's the path for Jock Peterson as his career is concerned. But I think the White Sox, and I think White Sox fans would agree, the defense that Adam Engel brings you and his ability to hit left-handed pitching and provide a different sort of swing profile than I'm going to simplify things, oversimplify things just a little bit here, than the swing and miss, you know, big-time power guys that are somewhat in the middle of that lineup, provide something different for you. Not that you can hit Adam 4, 5, or 6 or anything like that, but if the matchup provides, it allows you to kind of bump him up some more. His defense is also elite. And that is to be considered when you have to move Eloy Jimenez out of a game, perhaps for defensive reasons. If you want to DH Eloy Jimenez, if you just want to make sure that the defense is kind of evened out some. If you want to take if Luis Robert needs a day, you know, if you want to get him a back to back or something like that, coming off an off day or something, it will after all be the most baseball Luis Robert has ever played in a single season, expecting to play 40 games or so. Wanted to walk through that, wanted to talk about it a little bit. One more player I wanted to talk about, too, that's kind of sitting out there and waiting to be grabbed by, you know, seemingly a White Sox rival or potentially by the White Sox themselves if they did want to shake things up and get a little beefier in that lineup, is Nelson Cruz. As it so happens, Marty's in Highland Park and wants to talk about exactly that. Marty, what's up?
Connor, first I have to give you a compliment. I'm the guy who came up to you at Sox Fest a few years ago and said, how the heck can you work for the Sox when you grew up as a Cubs fan?
Marty, what's up?
I just got to tell you, when I heard your voice a couple of weeks ago, I said, all right, that's the Sox.
Thanks,
so you are now identified in my mind with the Sox.
Glad we've made the change. I know I sure am.
But I'll tell you, I'm just mystified. It seems like a no-brainer. Give Cruz a two-year contract. Take him away from the Twins, and then I see Nightingale saying, oh, no, Sox have no interest at all. They're so close. Why aren't they taking this move?
Yeah, you know, Marty, I think it's a fair question. I really do. I hadn't seen the Nightingale report that you were mentioning, but I get the gist of it, right? Nelson Cruz makes a lot of sense for a bunch of reasons. He is a tried-and-true hitter. I do not think that you let any kind of past move with Edwin Encarnacion puts you off of a different player. They're different people. They're different careers. They're different swing paths. They're different health levels, all that kind of stuff, right? It's really hard. I get it in that if you are a White Sox fan, and if you're listening, you are. If you are a White Sox fan and you have the ability as a ball club to look at your division rival, the Minnesota Twins, who, by the way, just added Andrelton Simmons on a one-year contract for Oh, gosh. Now I'm getting Marcus Semien's one-year deal. And can you look that up for me, Tyler? Can you grab that real quick? I think Semien got 18 with the Blue Jays, and I want to say that Andrelton got something like 12 with the Twins, but memory's a little goofy there. Anyway, point is, if you've got Nelson Cruz out there and you can take away from the Twins 16 home runs in a 60-game stretch, a .303 batting average, a .397 on-base percentage, my God, and a .595 slugging percentage, then that makes not only you better, but it makes sure they don't have that too. Tyler, what'd you find out?
$10.5 million for Andrelton Simmons.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And that Twins team is, I'm a big fan of, you know, I was talking earlier about how I'm going to, throughout the season, throughout our talks here on White Sox Weekly, I'm going to discuss the starting rotation as being more than five, really, because that's what it takes to get through a year. I'm also, you're also going to find out that I like defense a lot. There are some places I'm willing to sacrifice, like second base, perhaps, you know, just philosophically, but I like defense a lot. The Minnesota Twins, since 2019, have gone from Jorge Polanco and Miguel Sano on the left side of that infield, Polanco at short, Sano at third, who are atrocious defenders, to Josh Donaldson, albeit for 25 games, because I think he had the hamstring thing for most of the early part of the season, and Jorge Polanco in 20. Polanco's not a very good defensive shortstop, although was better for the 60 games in 20. And Josh Donaldson's a very good third baseman. To now, Josh Donaldson and Andrelton Simmons on the left side. I know that Simmons had a down defensive year last year. He also had, I believe it's an ankle and foot injury that really, really messed him up. You know, I don't know. He wasn't quite the health level that he's at. Fair to question whether or not at his age that elite top-tier defense still exists. But even still, if you're getting very good defense in whatever bat he wants to bring, defensively, that Twins left side is pretty tough right now. So in order to take away from a division rival, add to yourself, provide something that maybe you don't have, in, or maybe you'd like more of in Nelson Cruz, you could do it. He fits the lineup. He's another right-handed bat. And I know the White Sox and White Sox fans would, you know, love a little bit more pop from the left-hand side, but name for me a team in baseball that's going, no, we're good on left-handed pop. Thank you so much. Everybody wants left-handed pop. You know it too. There's, you know, the Blue Jays move with Semien is interesting. That's a really flushed out team with a whole bunch of fun hitters in that lineup. And somebody to, it's a team to concern yourselves with if you're the White Sox, who are still, as we've talked about quite a bit, are still projected to be one of, if not the best team in the American League. The Yankees, with their handful of additions, have, I think, surpassed them in expected war via Fangraphs. I get that. That's fine. I also know that, you know, if you look at a couple of different projection systems, and maybe we'll get into this after we talk with Jonathan Mayo here in a minute or two, Zips, it's a projection system Dan Zimborski runs over on Fangraphs, loves Lucas Giolito to take, another step. Like, strike out more guys and be better than he was. It also, it likes Dylan Cease a little bit more than, you know, obviously the ERA and the low strikeout rate liked Dylan Cease last season. So things to think about as we kind of put the White Sox into perspective against teams in the American League who are kind of making some moves. The White Sox made theirs early in picking up Lance Lynn and Liam Hendricks and Adam Eaton, and, you know, still have some spots they could fill out with some NRIs or maybe a one-year deal here or there. I don't think they're done. They might be, but I don't think they've completely closed everything off. We'll see. Still, they've got a handful of young kids coming up who either have seen the major leagues just a little bit, and Nick Madrigal or Andrew Vaughn, who's yet to, but seems like he's targeted for some PT in 2021. Jonathan Mayo knows the prospect game better than just about anybody. He runs MLB Pipeline at MLB.com. He will be our guest coming up in just a few on White Sox Weekly.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
The Southsiders have a new home.
This is White Sox Weekly, a behind-the-scenes look at the White Sox as they prepare for the 2021 baseball season.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN 1000.
Drill to left field, way out of here. Andrew Vaughn goes on top of the RSF.
Pay off. And his ball's hit well out to right. Way back
On the ground up the middle from Madrigal, and it sneaks on through. 4 for 4, Nick Madrigal. Danny Mendick scores. Madrigal upstairs to swat it to right field. Down the line it goes. Madrigal into second base. Nicky's two strikes has a second two-strike hit.
This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. Those are highlights cut by Tyler Aki. They are from Andrew Vaughn and Nick Madrigal. And I gotta be honest, it's just nice to hear the bat hit the ball a little bit. I'm Connor McKnight, and Jonathan Mayo of MLB.com and MLBPipeline.com is our guest on White Sox Weekly this morning. Jonathan, really appreciate you hopping on. Really looking forward to talking prospects with you. How are you?
I'm all right, Connor. How are you doing?
Absolutely fantastic. MLB Pipeline put out the top 100 for 2021. It has surprised absolutely no one that Wander Franco is at the top of the list. Let's get into the White Sox prospects, though, before we talk about those top five and just how kind of fun and mesmerizing they are. Andrew Vaughn at 14 is the White Sox highest rated prospect. He is also a guy that, you know, White Sox fans have heard from their team about potentially playing a big role as a DH or as a first baseman in the 2021 season, despite not having much minor league time at all. Your thoughts about Vaughn and why he's a guy the White Sox can dream on in 21?
Yeah, it's a short range dream rather than a long term dream. You know, when he came out in 2019, it was with that reputation of being a really, really advanced bat. You know, we had back to back years where we had Andrew Vaughn 1 year and then Spencer Torkelson, who went number one to the Tigers the following year. In the same vein, the guys that not going to need a whole lot of time to be ready to compete against big league pitching. And yes, we know Andrew Vaughn did not get a lot of real time because of what happened last year, but he did face a lot of advanced pitching, you know, at the White Sox alternate site in 2020, and more than fared well. He was the best hitting prospect there. And this is a guy who's, you know, a plus-plus hitter with plus power, unbelievable approach at the plate. It's, you know, foul pole to foul pole. He can drive the ball anywhere. For a guy with that kind of power, he's not going to strike out a ton. You know, the only question I think is going to be where to fit him into the lineup. I thought it was interesting at the alternate site, Connor, that they kind of moved him around a little bit, mostly just to sort of help with his athleticism. I think he's a first baseman when all said and done. But it does make me wonder if in the short term they try to, you know, trot him out to left field, say, if they need things of that nature. Especially because, you know, of Jose Abreu's presence at first base.
I'm with you. I think more prospects, if they have the athleticism, you know, corner type guys are getting pushed by teams to play, you know, both corners, not just that infield stuff, but also, you know, dabble in the outfield and, you know, less so vice versa. But even some, I wonder, Jonathan, how are you and your cohorts taking the, you know, some teams submitted film from their alternate sites this year, some teams did not. What's the game plan with how you guys are working with those kind of reports and those kind of not reports?
Yeah, we have lots of grains of salt that's ready to take. 'Cause, and here's what happens is, you know, we don't have access to the video that's shared, but it gets tricky because one of the things we do when trying to line up our top 100 is we'll send our order out to, you know, pro scouting directors, and it's trickier because they don't have reports from all 30 teams this year, unless, you know, guys played in the big leagues, the teams that shared video, or instructs. So, you know, it's a little trickier than in years past. So we take internal reports a little bit with a caveat, not that we think anything nefarious is at play. There's just a familiarity bias. You know, when you talk to a farm director about his own players, it's almost, sometimes you almost get like a parental feel. And it's also the only group of players they see every day. They're not concerning themselves with how Andrew Vaughn stacks up to Spencer Torkelson. They don't care. It's not part of the gig. So we have to sort of take that in mind. So when we get a positive report on someone from an alternate site, we do have to, you know, be a little bit careful. And then there are some farm directors who aren't as likely to kind of blow their guys up as a result of that familiarity bias.
What are you hearing, Jonathan, talking with Jonathan Mayo of MLB.com and MLBPipeline.com here on White Sox Weekly? What are you hearing, Jonathan, around the league or perhaps even from individual teams that you might be able to relate about how they will make up for the lost minor league time in terms of evaluating their own players and getting the cross-evaluation that's so crucial once you get to the trade deadline this summer?
It's amazing how many trades there have been this offseason, considering so many of these guys. And, it's funny, and I hadn't thought of it until you just posed the question. I live in Pittsburgh, and the Pirates have made a bunch of trades that I largely have seen as good. Almost all of them were guys who were really far away. Now, some of that was the nature of the trades, but the really far away guys were the guys that maybe were scouted more at Instructs. Coincidence? I don't know. But it's just something to think about. I don't think you can make up for lost time. The only thing that teams can sort of breathe a little bit about is that all 30 teams are in the same boat. I don't understand why a team wouldn't have been in the sort of data video sharing plan, because I think it's selling yourself short. Sure, maybe there are certain things you don't want people to see about your own players, but you're then not seeing the other team. So I don't know how you could be an active trade partner in that regard. You're going to have to rely on 2019 reports and, again, what little maybe that you saw at Instruct. So it's tough in terms of that. You can't make up for the reps. I do think that some of the younger guys who are at the alternate sites may end up benefiting more from that than they would have in the Arizona League or some rookie-level league. I think case in point might be Jared Kelly in the White Sox system. He got a chance to not only face a higher level of competition, but pick the brains of advanced-level pitchers who have been in the big leagues, were up and down to the big leagues. So he may have learned more about how to pitch and how to game plan and how to set up hitters than he would have just blowing hitters away in the Arizona League.
Jonathan, teasing the show as we go. We're definitely going to talk about Jared Kelly in a second here.
I watch
Twitter. The mentions are ridiculous, right? I mean, Michael Kopech, Nick Madrigal, Garrett Crochet are all the White Sox top 100, and all the White Sox fans want to hear about is Jared Kelly. We'll get to him in a second. Tell me why Michael Kopech and Nick Madrigal are 39 and 40 respectively on this list. If we could, I'd like to spend a little bit more time on Kopech and the return of a guy who hasn't pitched in a long time, because Sox fans did see Nick Madrigal hit with two strikes all season long in 2020 and watched him do it coming off of a bum shoulder. Let's hear about 39 and 40, Kopech and Madrigal.
So are you asking that because you think they're too low or they're too high? How are you framing this question?
I think they're about right, especially when, and I don't want to go through the entire list because folks should go check it out at MLB.com, but especially when you look at the guys that you have ranked above, like Royce Lewis. I'm just trying to keep it with the infielders as it goes to Madrigal, with Royce Lewis, with Ke'Bryan Hayes, with C.J. Abrams. I mean, I get why that would push a guy like Madrigal down, whose power potential is, kind of what it is.
Yeah, I think with both of them, they're kind of hard to figure out. We'll start with Kopech because there are a lot of question marks. He had returned to the mound. He was back throwing 100 miles an hour, and then he decided to sit out the season because of COVID. I don't think anybody can fault the guy for deciding to do that. But the fact of the matter is he hasn't really thrown a competitive pitch in quite some time. There are always questions about his command. The one thing we know about Michael Kopech is that the guy is a workout freak. He's going to be in ridiculously good shape. He wasn't sitting at home, eating pints of Ben and Jerry's and doing nothing else.
No, that was my job.
Like the rest of us, right? I was going to say, you didn't let me finish. He's going to be in really good shape. I think the question is, what is the feel for pitching going to be? What is his comfort level going to be once he comes back? The stuff is all there, right? The fastball and slider can get big league hitters out. We've seen it. And the fact of the matter is, he's still, he's not 30. He's going to be 25 at the end of April. So I think there's plenty of time for him to sort of tuck himself behind the top guys in the rotation and fit in there. Worst comes to worst, that fastball slider will look very, very good coming out of the bullpen if that's what they decide he needs to be. And then as for Madrigal, I think you hit the nail on the head. I love Nick Madrigal, but he's kind of a unicorn. Like, I don't know what to do with him. The guy never strikes out. You know, he puts the ball in play. He doesn't impact the ball all that much. You know, he's going to have to continue to show that he can impact it enough. So, you know, I think there are people who might have him higher. There might be people who have him much, much lower because of that. Because after a certain point in time, a guy who hits, you know, 100 gets 140 singles in a season, like, what is that? I think it was more strange. You know, he struggled a little bit defensively and with his base running, which is not like him. Because I think he's a plus defender and a guy who really can run and is smart in the base paths. So, you know, those are the parts of his game that add to the total sum of the player with the, you know, almost top of the scale hit grade.
Let's talk about Garrett Crochet and kind of the ranking system as it exists. Love to know what you thought of Crochet. And also, at 56, would he be, or would a player like him be pushed a little higher if you knew he was going to start ball games as opposed to be in the bullpen to start 2021? Or does that not factor into how you rank and where you rank these guys?
It factors in a little bit. You know, a little reliever risk often, you know, will sort of make us hedge bets a little tiny bit in the industry because we do get feedback from tons and tons of scouts. And the thing with Garrett Crochet is, you know, I think he got hurt more by the pandemic in terms of his standing on lists like these than almost anybody else from the 2020 draft, because he had a minor injury and didn't come back. Had it been a regular spring, he would have come back and maybe been the best college lefty in the game, and then he goes in the top five picks, and we're not talking about him in the white with the White Sox, right? The stuff is ridiculous. Everyone saw it, and it's just a question. I think we need to see it for a longer period of time. But I think he has all the ingredients to be a frontline kind of starter. I mean, we may look back, and the fact that he had this minor injury may be one of the greatest gifts the White Sox ever received, because based on his arm and his delivery, and the White Sox worked with him to, you know, sort of straighten some things out in terms of his direction to the plate that will help his command. That, you know, this is a guy that may go down as one of the best arms in this class.
Mm, that's goosebumps. Let's make Twitter happy. Jared Kelly, and let's talk about Benjamin Bailey as well. I know we touched briefly on Kelly, but I want to hit those two before we say goodbye for the morning.
Okay, well, you know, Jared Kelly is interesting because, you know, a lot of people thought that he was going to be a first rounder. He kind of priced himself out. There's some question marks why he fell to where he did, but kudos to the White Sox for rolling the dice a little bit and being able to sign him for obviously well above slot for a second-round pick. He had one of the best fastballs of any high school pitcher in the draft class. So this is a guy who was consistently that summer up to 98 regularly with a ridiculous changeup. The breaking ball was the thing that was a little bit inconsistent. That's what he really worked on. Again, I talked about the work that he did at the alternate camp. He really worked on that. You know, he's got a decent feel for pitching. So I think if the breaking ball continues to come along, then this is a guy who I think has a chance to be another really interesting athletic starting pitcher. And I think that's the other thing. He just needs to go out and pitch. Bailey is interesting just because the combination of an approach at the plate. He's really athletic given his size. You know, he's probably, you know, he's going to be a corner outfielder, probably a left fielder. You know, he runs okay, but it's really the bat, I think, that, you know, people should be excited about. He's quick to the ball. He doesn't try to do too much. You know, right now he's kind of hit over power, but I think there's probably going to be a lot more power to come, especially given his frame. You know, he's 6'4", and what, listed around 215 right now. So I think that it's exciting. It's just we need to sort of wait and see. Because guys like that, you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know how that body is going to fill out. You don't know, is he going to lose so much speed as he fills out that he has trouble playing the outfield, and then we're looking at a DH only. You know, is he Eloy Jimenez? You know, I think people would happily take the bat, but what do you do with that if it's a little rough defensively? I think he'll probably be okay in left field, but you know, we haven't seen him play in the United States for real yet.
Yeah, Jonathan, appreciate you. Great stuff, and you guys do awesome work at MLB Pipeline.
Anytime, Connor. Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Mayo, MLB.com, MLB Pipeline. We are perilously late for a break, and it's all my fault. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports is the new home of the White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. The ice is calling, and we've got our skates on. ESPN 1000 brings you the hockey show presented by Coors Light. Hosts Pat Boyle and Brian Hanley are talking Hawks with you this morning at 10. The Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Presented by Coors Light and brought to you by the Chicago Wolves.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you miss something, podcasts are available on the new ESPN Chicago app.
White Sox Weekly, ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Closing it out here on White Sox Weekly, January 30th. We'll flip the calendar to February soon and be closer and closer to pitchers and catchers and spring training and a whole bunch of fun here on the White Sox Radio Network. I can't wait to get started with Len and with DJ and watching baseball and Ryan McGuire, our executive producer, and Tyler and Eric. It's going to be a lot of fun. Just talked with Jonathan Mayo, and he is my, that prospect talk is my weakness. We went long, and I wanted to talk about this top 10 list that Scott Merkin put out on MLB.com. We'll push that to next week because I've got some good audio that I want to play with it. We'll do some remember when, that kind of thing. Looking forward to, in the near future, a conversation with Joe Posnanski of The Athletic. Looking to talk to him about a piece he wrote about Minnie Minoso, White Sox great and not in the Hall of Fame for very little reason. And the piece itself is about Minnie Minoso and how he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I do want to get to one thing. It's been brought up quite a bit during our conversation with Jonathan Mayo from the good folks on Twitch. You can watch us on Twitch. Remember, twitch.tv, just search ESPN 1000 Chicago. And Twitter has asked me a lot about it as well. The idea of piggybacking Kopech and Crochet in starts, or Crochet and Kopech, either way. I like the idea of piggybacking starters in theory, right? I like being progressive and proactive and thought-provoking with my pitching matchups. I like to make sure that I can confuse the enemy as much as possible. I want to make a lot of changes in games because I think that does throw hitters off their game and it screws with opponents' lineups. And I really like doing that because I like winning ball games a whole lot. The other thing, though, is this. It sounds to me like Michael Kopech is going to have to start in the may start in the minor leagues to knock some rust off, to figure some things out. You heard Mayo say that command is an issue. It is for every pitcher when they've got a layoff mostly. He needs to work that command out, which means Crochet would then be in the bullpen for a little while to start the season, then start piggybacking with Kopech once the season began. And I don't like that kind of movement back and forth for Crochet. I don't like that kind of handcuffing my pitching options when you've got to have a guy start at the minor leagues. That's the short answer for that. Thanks so much to Jonathan Mayo. He was fantastic. Thanks for calling, texting, tweeting, twitching, and listening most of all. The Hockey Show is next. Pat and Brian have Pat Foley at 10:35. Baby, it's going to be awesome. This is ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
On the new home of the White Sox.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.